Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello everyone, welcome back to another episode of Decoding the Unknown with me, your host Simon Wamis here. One of my writers in this case, Katie. Thank you, Katie, has written me a script, The Mysterious Iron Pillar of Delhi. I was just in Delhi. I was in Delhi like 2 months ago, but it was my last major trip, like long flight. I went there for a friend's wedding. I was just like in and out because it's just before Christmas. Flew in, 2 days later, literally I had to spend like one full night there. And then next day, boom, out, back home, in time for Christmas. I didn't see this iron pillar that we're talking about today because it's an iron pillar that apparently doesn't rust. I remember that being a thing. Let's go. The format of the show, if you're new here, I've never read this before. We're going to explore it together. The Whistlerverse, not something I called my YouTube channel portfolio, by the way. It just came about, I think, like Reddit or something, or Discord. Join our Discord, yay! There's links somewhere. I got a community manager now called Liam. Liam, I don't know if you're watching this, but if you could put a link to the Discord in the description below, that'd be grand. If there's no link in the description below, then Liam didn't do his bloody job. It's a bit unreasonable for me to expect that. Let's carry on. Has covered many topics about the past, but as far as ancient history goes, a lot seems to focus on ancient Rome, ancient Egypt, and our best friends on this channel, ancient aliens. Yes, always good for a click. Well, here's a short and sweet one about ancient India for a change, and it's got a little bit of everything. So let's uncover the mystery of the Iron Pillar of Delhi. The mystery. Here is maybe the slightly dubious story of the pillar, but you know that on this channel, if anything appears to be mysterious, you can bet we're going to circle back and do our damnedest to suck every molecule of joy and magic out of it for you. You're welcome. Yeah, this channel. I mentioned it many times before, but originally I wanted to call it like something like Skeptic something or whatever, but then I realized it wouldn't get any clicks, so I kind of called it like Ancient Alien. No, I didn't, but like, you know, it's definitely got that vibe where someone who might be into, like, actual mysterious shit clicks on it, and then I ruin their day. Maybe the channel would be more popular if I just leaned into it being like, what's the magic here? Well, that's magic, isn't it? You'll never know, it's magic! How's it not rust? Magic! I recently saw a comment on YouTube bemoaning the fact that we don't present stories with a very balanced viewpoint. Sorry, viewer, but it's way more balanced than every other channel who just presents the weird side without actually looking into any other explanations. Yeah, the person who's saying that is a person who's like, I just want to believe in fantasy. And we're like, yeah, but magic ain't real. And they're like, well, that's not very balanced. You should have given equal attention to it maybe being magic. And I'm sorry, but that's insane. Don't watch this channel if that's what you want. There are literally thousands of channels on YouTube which are just saying like, oh yeah, magic and aliens and curses. But I think we can happily admit that we're heavily biased on the side of the non-paranormal. And so what? This is not an impartial news channel. It's Decoding the Unknown. Sorry, rant over. This story isn't even that out there, so I guess I'm still reeling from the fact that people don't know what they're in for when they click on these videos. Yeah, I'm sorry. It's kind of my fault as well. I apologize. Not to the viewer. If you clicked on this, I'm totally happy to ruin your day if you think it's going to be about magic. You can click off now if you'd like to, you know, just believe in magic. Still, I apologize to Katie, who unfortunately had to read that comment. Anyway, in India, there is a large city called Delhi. In South Delhi, there is a neighborhood called Maroli. In Maroli, you will find the Qutub Minar complex, where you can see the eponymous highest tower in India, as well as the remains of many archways, monuments, mosques, and other buildings dating back to the 13th century. And within this, I didn't see any of this. I mostly saw the inside of my hotel. I was like, yeah, I could go outside, but it's really loud, and I'm tired, and like, I was going to say hungover, but that's not what I mean. Jet lags. Similar feeling, though, sometimes, isn't it? And within this rich historical and architectural complex, you'll find an iron pillar standing on its own in a courtyard, surrounded by nothing but a low, slightly shonky-looking security gate. And what's so great about this pillar, you might ask? Well, it appears to be a Hindu artifact in the middle of a Muslim complex. It's been dated to the 5th century CE. Nothing close to its size was made out of iron until many centuries later, and despite standing in the elements for over 1,600 years, it has not rusted. Dun, dun, dun! Pillar talk. Here's some info about the pillar itself. It's 7.21 meters high, that's 23 feet 8 inches tall, although just over a meter or 3 foot 8 inches of this is buried in the ground. I'm sure you're all wondering, so here you go. It's about 9/10 as long as a double-decker bus. I was wondering that. Oh, thank God we now know that. As well as about 5 Danny DeVitos tall. Excellent. It's not particularly thick, and it tapers slightly as it goes up, meaning that the base has a diameter of about 17 inches or 43 centimeters, and the top has a diameter of around 12 inches or 30 centimeters. It is noticeably less smooth at the base than it is at the up the rest of the shaft. The pillar weighs approximately 6 tons. At the top of the pillar are a series of ornate stacks, collectively called a decorative bell capital, the capital being the top or upper end of a column or pillar that's usually distinctively decorated. Sorry to use the words shaft and bell so close together. Also, you previously used the word shaft. No, wait, you already said shaft. There was another one. Shaft, length, something. There was another one. It just made me think of penises. All these objects are pretty phallic at the end of the day. I'm sure there will be a few erections in here somewhere, but that is usually the best word to use. Also, I once went to a museum. It was in Colombo, which is the capital of Sri Lanka, and it was like this national museum, and I was like, oh yeah, I'm gonna go there, could be entertaining, go inside. And it's like, it's one of those museums where it's like, this is, it's in this really nice old building, and it just hasn't been thought about very much, and not much effort seems to have been put in. This was over a decade ago now, so I don't know if it's like that still, but there'd be like these bits of rock. And the description of this, like, bit of rock that kind of looks like humans have carved it a bit would be, like, part of a pillar. And you'd be like, fascinating. No other information about that, like, where the pillar's from or anything like that. It's just like, no, someone found, like, a bit of a pillar somewhere, dumped it in a museum, and just put a little label on it saying part of a pillar. And you'd walk around the museum and you'd see all these different, like, bits, like, pillar-looking things, and all of them would just be labeled the same, a part of a pillar. And you'd be like, this is bullshit. Like, what am I supposed to learn here? There is also a groove or socket in the top of this iron pillar, which means that it previously had another piece or a topper to finish it off, likely a figure of some sort. There are other things of note on the pillar itself. For example, some inscriptions. The oldest is just under halfway up, and it's made of 3 verses of Sanskrit in what may be the Brahmi script, deeply engraved onto the pillar, covering an area of about 65 by 27 centimeters. There's also another, much shorter inscription, dated a few centuries later, which seems to reference Angampal II founding Delhi. We'll look at these in a bit more detail later. The other thing of note is that the iron pillar has sustained damage maybe 2/3 of the way up. There's a large dent and a crack where it was apparently hit by a cannonball. Wow, it's not very big. That's a hell of a shot. I mean, they probably weren't aiming for the pillar. But it's going to be loud making that sound. It's also quite strong that it just stood up to a cannonball. If you just happen to be in the area, as I was like 2 months ago but didn't see this, you're probably there to look at the Qutb Minar, India's tallest tower and a UNESCO World Heritage Site. You might not think much of a random incomplete iron pillar stuck in the middle of a courtyard, but if you knew anything about this pillar at all, you'd actually have quite a few questions, such as, how was it made? How did it get to where it is now? Why hasn't it rusted? Can it really bring you luck? Easy answer that one. No. It's like, how many... I'm going to throw a penny in a fountain. It's going to bring me good luck. The only people who believe that are 6 years old and under. Is there really some extraterrestrial angle to this? Again, no. But let's get into it. I mean, the only way this could have some extraterrestrial thing is like that Tutankhamun dagger, right? The one that's made out of a meteoroid. That's extraterrestrial. Pretty cool. But I don't think so. That's a lot of iron to randomly... Maybe it did come from a meteorite. That's kind of a possible explanation, isn't it? The history of the iron pillar. While there is no actual date inscribed on the main inscription on the pillar, it can be dated to the 5th century CE with some certainty. Using paleography, or the study of historical writing systems, the longer inscriptions on the side in Sanskrit have been matched with a script used during a certain period in Indian history covered by the Gupta Empire. There's also a king name checked in the inscription who matches the time period, King Chandragupta II. Some of the characters are not quite complete due to the iron having closed back over some parts, and earlier transcriptions of the original text were also not as accurate as later ones. Well, like the iron could close back over it? I guess that's one of those things you're like, yeah, over a long enough time that like things that you think are solid kind of move. Like when you go in a really old building, like really old, and you look at the windows and they're kind of like thicker at the bottom. Isn't that... Wait, I get the feeling this might be an urban legend. But someone says, like, isn't it because glass... Nah, I'm pretty sure this is an urban legend. But it's like people would say, oh yeah, because the glass is actually liquid and over hundreds or thousands of years, it gradually just falls down to the bottom like a liquid. But I think it was actually just because they were a bit shit at making glass back in the day. Because glass is not a liquid, is it? It's solid. It's glass. If it was liquid, it'd be really different. Translations into English of the Sanskrit inscription have been made, and one done in 1888 by John Faithful Fleet is on a tablet that was hung for posterity in 1903 on a wall near the pillar. I don't understand why this isn't... Why, like, honestly, this Iron Pillar of Delhi, it'd be a lot easier for me to see if it was in the British Museum where it belongs. Just a joke, relax. Other translations have been carried out since and do vary slightly, but these variations do not affect the names of persons mentioned or the estimated time frame that the inscription was made. Basically, the overall gist is that the verses sing the praises of King Chandra, saying things like, he by whom, having crossed in warfare the 7 months of the river Sindhu, the Valikas were conquered, he by the breezes of whose prowess the southern ocean is even still perfumes. What are you saying? This is so hard to read. When you're translating something, just translate it into modern English. Don't be like, oh, we'll make it sound all weird. Just like, or just update it. It's a translation. It doesn't have to be like historical. And who having the name of Chandra carried a beauty of countenance like the beauty of the full moon? Good Lord. Finally, the quote ends. These translations are made from the first and third verses. A later translation takes a bit of issue with the second verse, but they both agree that it seems to refer to the king leaving or quitting the earth, i.e. dying. It's like, yeah, one day I'm going to quit the earth. Yeah, just death is an interesting way to put it. Like, why wouldn't you translate that? So if it was like quitting the earth, literally in whatever language this was, Sanskrit, then you'd just be like, dying, dying. Why would you translate it directly? That's weird. Like, languages just have different ways of doing it, but it's not like you translate it into English directly. This piece is commonly read as a eulogy, although it has been posited that the king hadn't literally died at the time, but had merely abdicated and was still alive, living his best old man life somewhere else. It doesn't really matter now, as it was some 16 centuries ago, but what we can surmise is that the pillar was created as a monument to the king and was probably made in the early 400s as Chandragupta II's reign ended in 415 CE. We can also deduce that this pillar was not originally installed in Delhi, as the last part of the inscription has been translated to say, this lofty standard of the divine Vishnu was set up on the hill called Vishnapada, the pillar being the lofty standard, obviously. The name Vishnapada clearly comes from the Hindu god Vishnu and translates as something like the footprint of Vishnu, so we know that there's a big hill involved. It's been theorized that because it's known to have links with Chandragupta II and its proximity to other known mining and metalwork activity of the time, that the pillar was originally erected in Udayagiri in what is now Vidishia in the state of Madhya Pradesh. In case you're wondering, that's hundreds of miles from its current location in Delhi. I was also wondering why I had to pronounce these really difficult names. You could just say some other place near Delhi, but not so near, hundreds of miles away. Pillars were not an uncommon thing in India or elsewhere in the world during this period. Yeah, since they invented the pillar, I feel like pillars are just pretty fucking standard. It's like they're useful. Even nowadays, like you build a building, it's gonna be some pillars in there. Why not? And not just like decorative ones, but like pillars for like holding shit up. They would have been made as symbols of victory or devotion. There are at least two other examples of old-ass iron pillars in India, the Kodachadri and the Dar pillars, but the one in Delhi has a few centuries on them at least and is also taller and in far better condition than the other two. There's also some folklore surrounding the Delhi pillar, although I've seen slightly differing versions. One is that the iron pillar was set up as a dedication to the king and fixed so deep into the earth that it pierced the hood of a serpent god, possibly Shisha. And it was said that it was bad luck to mess with the pillar, but centuries later another king, Angapal II from the Tamora dynasty, wanted to check into it, so he had the pillar dug up. Sure enough, the base was covered in blood, and a curse fell on Angpal Tamar. Yeah, that didn't happen. There's no blood down there. It's not piercing the head of a servant, that's ridiculous. And then he didn't have a curse. He's just real unlucky. The other version is that Angerbaltamar was already in possession of the pillar and had it moved to what eventually became Delhi, which he is historically credited for founding. He was the one who hit the poor snake on the head with it and was told that as long as the pillar stood firm, his legacy would be protected. Then he promptly had it removed to check if it had been inserted deep enough. The blood on the ends proved it had been, and then the curse fell upon him. Oh no! I looked into Angerbaltamar, and he doesn't appear to have been afflicted by the curse. Although his dynasty died out shortly after his reign, so I suppose the curse went for his descendants rather than him. Yeah, that does sound like he was kind of affected by the curse. I mean, the curse isn't real. But you could be like, that was the curse, wasn't it? That all your descendants die. Like, that'd be pretty bad. Like, if it was like, the curse went for his descendants, like my descendants, I'd be like, my kids and grandkids, I'd be like, yeah, that's worse. I like them more than I like me. Angerbaltamar was linked to the serpent in other later writings too, with one 18th century inscription being translated as saying he even caused the great Sheshnag, on which earth is stable, to shake. As we said, he founded and ruled over the Delhi area, so that explains why the pillar is there, and also the approximate time that it got there, which was, according to the short inscription on it, 1109. This equates to 1052 CE, as calendars were and are still not universal. Wait, they're not universal? I mean, yeah, I know, like, North Korea is going to be using one that's like, oh, when's your calendar start? Ah, when our great supreme leader was first pushed out of his mother's birth canal in a perfect birth, which caused her no pain, and then he immediately started to talk and the calendar began. But, like, most people are on the same calendar, right? We had that old, like, Julian and Gregorian shit, and then we fixed it, so everyone was on the same thing. No? There have also been a few suggestions for how Delhi got its name that are related to the Iron Pillar. One even includes a play on the word that was recorded in an old song. According to an ex-local tour guide, Tanvi Bikchandani, there's a verse that translates to, "The pillar was loosened and the Tomar lost his head." The Hindi word for loose is deal, which sounds like Dilly, which is how many people pronounce the city's name. I love a good pun, but I don't think that this particular origin story is real. No, probably because there's a real origin story behind the name Delhi, because it's quite a big place, and people have probably thought about that, you know, for more than 3 seconds. Angerbaltamar built Lal Kot, which was Delhi's first fort, and his prize iron pillar was erected inside it. Once his dynasty was overthrown by a Muslim army, the first mosque in India was built on the site, which explains why a Hindu monument is standing in the middle of a Muslim area, but maybe not why they decided to leave it standing. Yeah, I'd be like, if I'm going in and I'm like, well, I'm going to build like a bigger religious thing over your stupid religious thing, I'd be like, well, I'm going to definitely knock down that pillar and, like, I don't know, turn it into like a bench or something, like something stupid, so it's extra offensive. Maybe they thought it just looked cool or were in awe of its rust-proof status. It was thought to have been hit by a cannonball in the 730s in an attempt to destroy it or knock it down to see if there was anything more valuable inside. There was only one hit from close range, and it's been posited that the cannons could have potentially caused too much damage to surrounding buildings at the time, so the pillar was left where it was. Oh, come on, the last guy just dug it out. How deep in the ground is it dug? This is the past. Just go get lots of, like, slaves and be like, dig that hole, slaves! And they'll dig it out and there. It's not that complicated. This all feels very, like, mythy, doesn't it? On a side note, there are another series of pillars throughout India known as Pillars of Ashoka, which were all linked with an emperor called Ashoka the Great. They are all made of stone and have decorated capitals, which are usually topped with something like a lion. The Iron Pillar of Delhi has sometimes been referred to as a Pillar of Ashoka, but it was made later and out of different material, so I think it's incorrect to connect them. I just realized today, like, I took my kid to school. One of the kids at school, his name is Lion. I'm like, that's fucking sick, bro. You call your kid Lion. I love that. My kids have got stupid traditional names. What's called kid? What's your name? Panther. Yes! There's no particular mystery in how the Iron Pillar got from Udagiri to Delhi. Yes, it weighs about 6 tons, but it's not like India didn't have a fucking wheel. They were actually using wheels for centuries before the Europeans were. They also had things like horses and camels to act as working or hauling animals, never mind those big daddy elephants. The pillar was moved and re-erected in one piece, which brings us to the next question. How is this thing actually made? And it's time to spice things up a bit with a little sprinkling of our old chum, Eric von Daniken. No! No! This is the Chariots of the God guy. He's so full of bullshit. I mean, allegedly. Is he still alive? Oh, I mean, I was going to say something horrible there. Don't wish death on people, Simon. He's not that bad. He's just a charlatan, in my opinion, allegedly. Oh, go on then. In his blockbuster book. chariots of the gods, von Daniken makes a brief mention of the Iron Pillar in Chapter 6, where he says, "In the courtyard of a temple of Delhi, there exists, as I've already mentioned, a column made of welded iron parts that has been exposed to weathering for more than 4,000 years without showing a trace of rust, for it contains neither sulfur nor phosphorus. Here we have an unknown alloy from antiquity staring us in the face. Perhaps the column was cast by a group of far-sighted engineers who did not have the resources for colossal building, but wanted to bequeath to posterity a visible, time-defying monument to their culture." All right, Eric. Is that what they wanted, Eric? You know what I call that, Eric? Fucking wild-ass speculation. So, here, he's introducing the idea that ancient aliens created this magic non-rusting pillar. Wow, that was loud. Ah, oh, it's a street cleaner. Did you guys hear that? This microphone's, like, super... The one I'm using, it doesn't really pick up sounds from around, but a big-ass truck just drove past my window. Sweeping the streets. Fascinating, Simon. Let's carry on. The pillar even made the list as an out-of-place artifact, joining the ranks of the Antikythera mechanism, the Turin Shroud, and the Piri race map as things that appear to be out of historical context, but actually aren't. I think we've addressed all of those previously on this channel. It's this classic thing of like, oh yeah, people in the past couldn't do shit. And it's like, but they can. They were quite intelligent. This is actually quite a handy segue for us as we now pivot to decoding the main mystery of this pillar, the non-rusting aspect. Rust-free since the 5th century CE. Iron goes rusty, that's a fact. And the quickest way to make iron rust is to expose it to water and air, both of which are in plentiful supply in Delhi. So, how is this thing plentiful supply of air? I'm not sure. Like, I went there, it's like, yeah, there's lots of air, but it's all very polluted. I was in the airport on the way home, and they have this giant concourse, like, stretching one side of the airport to the other. And generally, like, inside, all the air's, like, filtered. Like, in my hotel, they had, like, this big screen at the front being, like, air brought to you by. And I'm like, oh, shit, okay. And it's, like, measuring the parts per million, like, particulates per million and stuff. Because you go outside in Delhi, and it's just smog. It's like smog all day, every day. At least I was there. I was there for 2 days. But it was constantly smoggy. You'd go outside and you'd be like, oh, gross. It's like just in the air, this smog. Even in the airport, that giant concourse, you think you're inside. You look to the end of the giant concourse and it's kind of foggy just because somehow there's pollution inside. So, yeah, sorry, I got there from Delhi Air. Sorry, rant over. Fascinating stuff, Simon. Let's carry on. So, how is this thing even standing over a millennium and a half later? Did ancient Indians possess knowledge that was centuries ahead of its time? The answer is, well, yes and no. First things first, this is why I called it a slightly dubious story at the top, and I expect anyone who has heard of this pillar before has been yelling at Simon the whole time that the Iron Pillar is not actually free of rust. Okay, well, it's news to me. The bottom third is actually quite rusty looking and also noticeably rougher and more pitted than the rest of the pillar. This has led some people to speculate that the whole portion was supposed to be buried in the ground, but then the pillar would be kind of short, not really an impressive tribute to a king. The rest of the pillar stood in excellent shape, however, definitely worthy of the question of how it's withstood the test of time. As for ancient Indian people having secret or advanced knowledge, this is not how the pillar came to be so rust resistant. And yes, it isn't that it's magically impervious to rust, it's just that it has great rust or corrosion resistant properties. What happened was a combination of the real life metalwork skills of these people plus the circumstances surrounding how it was made plus just a little bit of random happenstance. So here's how the pillar was made. The Iron Pillar of Delhi is the product of expert forge welding. Basically, large lumps of iron were heated to such a degree that they could be fused together by hammering or rolling. Think of every blacksmith scene you've ever seen where they're hammering a sword into shape. But this was on a much larger scale, using coal-heated furnaces. The pillar was created horizontally, and just the size of the thing in itself was a pretty good demonstration of a 5th century craftsman's talents, but then they also added the decorative capital on top. This is made from 7 separate pieces, which were shrunk fit around a cylinder, which was then inserted into the top end of the pillar. Alright, fascinating stuff, but where does the non-rust thing come into it? The pillar's about 98% iron, with the remaining 2% being made up of trace amounts of other things like copper, nickel, nitrogen, etc. But notably, it contains about 0.25% phosphorus, which is much higher than would normally be expected. This is because the ancient Indian forge welding process didn't use lime or limestone, which would usually aid in the removal of phosphorus, and the types of wood used to fire the furnaces also contained higher amounts of phosphorus than wood from trees in other parts of the world. This higher level of the chemical increased the pillar's resistance to corrosion, but that's not the only reason why it's still in such good shape. There is, in fact, rust all over this thing, but the very thin layer of it has also protected the main pillar of the body. An article on Penn Museum's website states, "There is a natural tendency for a piece of iron to rust at an ever-diminishing rate as corrosion products form on its surface and seal it. This layer, the amount of phosphorus, and the Delhi weather itself have all come together to create another fine coating over the iron, which has preserved it in excellent condition all these centuries." Professor R. Balasubramanian has studied this thing extensively and says, "Added benefits accrue when the phosphate forms as a continuous layer next to the metal. In the case of alternate wetting and drying cycles, such as those present in atmospheric corrosion, the amorphous phosphates can transform to crystalline modifications, and in this process, there is a large reduction in porosity of the phosphate." Oh my god, dude, you're using so many big words. "This transformation results in further excellent corrosion-resistant properties." Okay, so it's like, yeah, there's a bit of rust on the outside, which keeps the inside tip-top. Boom! That's what that says in English. The continuous layer is also known as misawite, and an article on Atlas Obscura called The Iron Pillar of Delhi states, "Misawite is a compound of iron, oxygen, and hydrogen which does not rust." So, there you go. I also saw that clarified butter, or ghee, might have been rubbed on it a lot in the first 500 or so years of its life, which might have also formed some sort of protective film. That's weird. But this probably would have been done more on the lower bits than at the top, and that's where the rusting is worse, so either it didn't help or it actually made it worse. Now let's quickly circle back to Erich von Däniken. No! Oh, in his published claims about the pillar originally, he stated that the pillar had stood for more than 4,000 years without showing a trace of rust, for it contains neither sulfur nor phosphorus. Bruh. Well, we just found out that phosphorus is the reason that it's not rusting. It's also not 4,000 years old, isn't it? Like, a couple of thousands? What did we say it was? Well, we know that while it's old, it ain't that old, and it also shows loads of rust, has traces of sulfur, and a comparatively high level of phosphorus. So yes, you're 0 for 4 on that one, von Däniken. Oh my god, shocking. Von Däniken got something wrong? How? He wrote such a reputable book, The Chariots of the Gods! It's about as useful as watching an episode of Stargate if you want to learn about ancient Egyptian history. To give the man his due, though, he did retract this one artifact as having been created by ancient aliens in an interview that he did with Playboy in 1974. When the interviewer, Timothy Ferris, brings the... Timothy Ferris, isn't he the dude who wrote that, like, 4-hour work week? Brings up the fact that the pillar does have rust, and we all know how it was made, and asks von Däniken if he thinks it's still mysterious. Von Däniken replies, "No, not anymore, but when I wrote Chariots of the Gods, the information I had concerning the Zion Column was as I presented it. Since then, I have found that investigations were made, and they came to quite different results, so we can forget about this iron thing." Well, so you just made stuff up, and then someone, like, didn't make stuff up. Dude. Weird. When investigations were made, people suddenly found out that it hadn't been created by extraterrestrial big brain tourists after all. Like, they could have been the only logical answer. And calling it this iron thing is a bit disparaging, don't you think? In the same article, Ferris, probably getting pretty gleeful, brings up something that astronomer Carl Sagan had to say about Erich von Däniken. "The kindest thing I can say about von Däniken is that he ignores the science of archaeology. Every time he sees something he can't understand, he attributes it to extraterrestrial intelligence, and since he understands almost nothing, he sees evidence of extraterrestrial intelligence all over the planet." Whoosh! Boom! Carl Sagan drops the fucking mic. Just to add this in somewhere, the pillar has also been said to grant wishes if you put your arms around it, but you have to do this with your back to it, making it a bit harder, I guess. This is moot now, as you're not allowed to touch the pillar, and there's a gate all the way around it, stopping anyone from getting too close. And from that moment on, no one ever had their wishes come true. So sad. It has received decent reviews on TripAdvisor, with no one giving it below a 3, which seems quite good. So there you go. Mystery solved. The non-rusting pillar does, in fact, rust. And it's actually common knowledge about how this thing was made. You'd probably get much more out of looking at it if you knew some backstory, which you now all do, so check it out the next time you're in Delhi. Go ancient Indians, you really created a long-lasting erection, presumably because of its misawite coating. The pillar will continue to stand forever, or at least it might make it to 4,000 years, giving Erich von Däniken a slight reprieve after all. Yes, that makes everything he did. That's so... Erich von Däniken. No! Thanks for being here. I'll see you in the next episode.
Have you ever stumbled upon a story that's just too weird to be true?
But too intriguing to ignore?
I'm Laura Anderson.
And I'm Tom Reynolds. Together, we're the hosts of Wanna Hear Something Weird?
A new podcast where we venture into the heart of mind-bending mysteries.
From peculiar legends to ghostly encounters, we try to separate fact from fiction.
Join us on a journey into the bizarre. Listen to Wanna Hear Something Weird wherever you get your podcasts.